Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me, beloved co-host
Mike Cosentino, right here on Democratic Perspective this morning on a fine Monday morning, a sunny Monday morning in Northern Arizona.
And joining us is Gary LeMaster, the brains behind Democratic Perspective.
That's right. Silent Sam over here.
That means we're all in trouble. Good morning.
Go ahead and introduce
us. We got Jim Holloway this morning. We got two guests this morning. First of all, we'll say hello to Jim Holloway.
Good morning. It's great to be with you and enjoying this cool morning throughout Arizona.
My first question is, what the hell is the corporation commission that you're running for? Please explain.
You know, one of the people helping me out was distributing literature in a parking lot. You know, lots of cars close together, and his informal poll of nine people told him that two had already voted and six of them had no idea what the corporation commission was. So a common question. It's, you know, one, I think it'd be clearer if we call it Arizona's Public Utilities Commission.
Yeah, that's what I usually
every state
do.
Has one, and that term means more to people. But essentially, that is what it is. It is the entity that sets the rates and the policies for our electric, water, sewer, natural gas, and landline telephone companies. And I should probably clarify on the water and sewer side, if it's a private water company. And, of course, much of the Verde Valley is served by private water companies who are regulated by the commission. If you happen to be in a city or town that has their own provider, then it's your town council that takes care of it. But basically, every utility except cable, which is locally regulated. And they do have some other duties. They oversee railroad and pipeline safety. They regulate the financial securities industry.
Wow.
And if you want to start a corporation or incorporate a nonprofit in Arizona, this is where you go to do it and file your paperwork. And, you know, that seems to be where the name comes from. But mostly what they are doing is setting the rates and policies for utilities. So issues like, do you want to see Arizona be investing in solar? Do you have concerns about the rates or quality of service from your utility? These are the issues that come before the commission.
So if I want to start an LLC, I'll be dealing with the Corporation Commission, and if I want to see more solar energy in the utilities that serve the state, I will be dealing with the Corporation Commission.
Jim, I think one of the things we noticed this year with the Corporation Commission, particularly, but not only during the Republican primary, is the fantastic amount of dark money pouring into what to many Arizonans is still a sort of obscure post. What's going on? I think millions of bucks. And
At this point, I think about $3.5 million have been poured into this campaign. $500,000 was from the solar industry in the primary, and at least we know who they were because we know the group that funded it, and it was some of our national solar leasing firms that money came from, and it was to back two moderate Republicans who got defeated by the $1.7 million that came in to attack them and to support the two more conservative Republicans that won their primary. And then what appear to be the same organizations have now put $1.3 million into negative ads against Sandra Kennedy, the other Democratic candidate. They're, you know, so I'm Jim Holloway, Sandra Kennedy, the two Democrats, and then we have two Republicans, and this is an office where you get to vote for two. But the it's the classic secret dark money. It comes through groups who will never have to say where it came from. Though the common assumption that everyone seems to accept is that the predominant person putting this money in is Arizona Public Service, so our largest electric utility in the state, appears to be making an aggressive bid to buy the election of the individuals who are responsible for regulating them.
Well, help us with that. It's
unprecedented.
It seems like APS, I mean, they spend a lot of money on ads that are pro-solar. It seems to be common sense that APS would support as much solar energy as possible here in the sunny state of Arizona, and yet they're supporting candidates that aren't as pro-solar, certainly as you and Sandra Kennedy. So what's the story here? Give us the politics behind this, other than corruption. I mean, I can't see how any corporation, we speak kind of frankly on the show sometimes, I can't see how any corporation, I mean, let me frame this in a way I want to frame it. I can't see how any corporation commissioner cannot support some alternative forms of energy, solar being chief among them, without smacking of some sort of corrupt influence behind them.
Right, right. And I, you know, I certainly agree that Arizona should be a leader in solar. We need our traditional sources of power, but let's pursue solar and other renewables as aggressively as we can. I think this comes from a couple of places. Let's assume for the moment everybody's right in the assumption that it is APS, and that it is offensive. It's we made a basic deal with our utilities. It's like, okay, we will grant you a monopoly because you don't want 10 power lines or 10 phone lines running to your house. So we will grant you a monopoly. In exchange for that, we're going to set up a regulatory body to make sure that you don't abuse that and abuse your customers. And it's certainly a violation of the public trust. It's a violation of the deal for that monopoly to now try to buy the election of that commission. And the commissioners actually could order reporting, but none of our five current Republican commissioners have demonstrated the political will or independence to do that. And that in itself, I think, is highly disturbing. APS is, yes, you're right. They are very busy doing a lot of ads to portray themselves as pro-solar. And in fact, you know, in fairness to them, they have made some very good and innovative investments in solar. They are particularly concerned about solar that they don't own and control. So if you put solar on your roof, for all intents and purposes, you're reducing the demand they're going to have for their product. And that causes them grave concern. There's also some speculation that this is about more than just solar, but like you say, it's an effort to control the commission, to have it vote for what they're going to want with every issue that comes forth.
Like rate increases, for example.
One would assume that they would be looking for some rate increases. Another big issue in Arizona that we kind of temporarily have put to rest, but it will come back, is do we open up electric power to competition? So you would have a choice. You could decide whether you wanted your power from APS, or maybe you wanted to get it from Unisource or Tucson Electric Power. Maybe you want to get it from a wind producer in Montana, or a solar producer in New Mexico. And then your local utility would simply wheel that power across their lines to you. There have been efforts to try to open markets up that way. That clearly would be of significant concern to our current utilities as well. And so there are some thoughts that this may be part of what's going on.
Well, aren't the Republicans more likely to open, quote unquote, open up the markets than the Democrats? I mean,
that would be the traditional ideology, but it's not always that clear.
Yes.
And to be honest, as I look at the statements of the six candidates we have running, I do not see a lot of difference on this issue. So, hard to know exactly what's driving this other than we are big enough to control all elected officials in Arizona, and we seem to be, if we're APS, they seem to be trying to do exactly that.
Take a minute, Jim, and tell us your background. Tell us who Jim Holloway is and why he's running for Corporation Commission.
Yeah. So I actually started my career working on energy issues in 1980, briefly, and then spent a bit of time back in graduate school. I moved to Arizona in 1992. I spent the majority of my career with the Arizona Department of Water Resources. I was the assistant director. I oversaw the water management programs for the whole state. I spent a few years with Arizona State University as what they call professor of practice and helping them to start up a new curriculum on water and energy sustainability issues. For the last 5 years, I was with a group called the Sonoran Institute, started in Tucson 20-some years ago, and works throughout the West on land and growth and natural resource issues, and stepped down from that to campaign full-time about 5 months ago. I have a PhD in water resources and land use planning, and basically my whole career has been dealing with land use, water, growth, and energy issues. And so for me, running for the commission is a way to be able to help shape the policy for the future of Arizona on these issues for which I have great passion and have spent my whole career. So that's probably a predominant reason for running. Another one, just as many of the people I've talked to as I've gone around the state, I'm very pained by what seems to be a broken political system. You know, it's become very divisive. It's everyone's convinced that they're right, and the people who disagree with them are not just wrong, but perhaps even evil.
Right.
And if we continue down this path, we will destroy our economy. We won't be investing in our future. We won't be investing in our kids. And I believe if we can just put in more pragmatic people who don't care so much about partisan politics, but like myself, I say, look, I'm running to represent everyone in Arizona. I'm running to represent that common ground where we can invest in our future.
You know, I'm only hearing that.
Those are the key reasons for me.
I'm only hearing that from Democrats. The Republicans still seem pretty invested in the as partisan as possible because that's how they get elected. I think. I like the common ground idea, but it doesn't seem to. It seems to be when only one side wants to reach across the aisle. I guess there's not a lot of reaching.
Well, you know, and perhaps there's some some practical reasons for that. If we look at Arizona, where the Republicans have a registration disadvantage, they can just appeal to their base. And in fact, you know, what I've noticed in my campaign is my opponents are showing up nowhere other than highly partisan Republican events. All the debates we were supposed to have would be canceled. They don't talk to the media. They just have a simple soundbite out there, and good luck getting anything else from them. And I'm running all over the state talking to everyone who wants to talk. And in fact, a week and a half or two ago, I was up in Payson. I was invited to come up to talk to the Payson Tea Party because of their concerns that they're not being represented. They're not being heard by their commission. And we certainly didn't agree on everything, but we found common ground on some of these key issues. We had a good conversation. And I think for a Democrat to win, you need independents. You need Republicans. And I think it does what it's supposed to do. It's forcing us to find that common ground. And I think our Republicans are thinking they can just hunker down and enough people will go and click the R levers in the voting machines or connect the two lines, and they don't have to engage the voters. And, again, that's something I find offensive. Elections should be about engaging with voters, about meeting candidates, about talking about real issues, and that's proving increasingly difficult for us to do.
It's astonishing to see all the attack ads going back and forth. Logically, the position is sort of nonpartisan, isn't it? I mean, there really shouldn't be this huge battle between Republicans and Democrats over the Corporation Commission. I know that some people represent special interests. They were basically in APS's favor and so forth and so on. But it's almost a technical position, isn't it, in a lot of ways?
It is, and I completely agree. It should be nonpartisan, and you know, only about a dozen states elect their commission. It's appointed in most, although you can get good and bad people, as we know, either way.
Right.
The other unique about Arizona is we're one of only, I think, it's seven states where our commission is established in our state constitution. So it truly is a fourth branch of government in Arizona, and though little recognized, it does have significant influence, and it makes what you're doing today, helping people understand the commission, important. And a key part for me of running was to get conversations going about these issues and to help people understand this is an office that influences the future of our state and we should be paying attention to it.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't point out that you were endorsed by the state's leading newspaper, the Arizona Republic. What other endorsements have you gotten, or is that a big deal in this particular race?
It's certainly always having the endorsements of the papers is good, and unfortunately, a lot of the papers have chosen not to make endorsements in this race. They go and they look at the four top statewide races, and this is the fifth one, and it often doesn't get a lot of attention. But the Arizona Republic did. I was grateful they came out and they acknowledged two things. Is one is that I was one of the most qualified candidates to ever run for this office, and second, that I would bring some needed diversity to the conversation, that it currently is just five Republicans on the commission. In Southern Arizona, I was endorsed both by the Southern Arizona Chamber of Commerce, the business leaders of Southern Arizona, as well as the Sierra Club. And to me, you know, that sort of shows the kind of diversity of working and speaking to everyone that I'll bring to the commission.
Let me ask you, as a candidate, we're looking for inside information here. Have you got anybody told you about turnout? If Arizona goes the traditional way, the conservatives turn out, then the people that vote sensibly don't.
Right. It is a difficulty in elections in general. The expectation, if we look at the last midterm election 4 years ago, is, you know, probably about 1.8 million people will vote. As of several days ago, we had 800,000 early ballots statewide. So you had getting pretty close to half the people had voted as of 2 or 3 days ago. So one would expect that about half our votes are early, even if delivered at the last minute, and about half will be coming to the polls. Democrats tend not to vote in these midterm elections when there's not a presidential candidate, so that creates an additional headwind for a Democrat. So any Democrats or independents or Republicans thinking we might need some change, you know, we really encourage you to get to the polls. Of course, the challenge with independents are now the number one party registration, or none of the above is the number one registration in Arizona. But again, only about a third to 40% of them actually turn out to vote. So it weakens the influence that they could have to try to find this middle ground.
And you think you could work well with the Republican commissioners who are already on there? You could bring a different voice to the commission?
Absolutely. I was elected 4 years ago to the Central Arizona Project Board. That's the, you know, the canal that brings water in from the Colorado River into Central Arizona. It's a 15-member board, and that, you know, that meets, I think, what you've talked about. It's nonpartisan. When people vote, they don't even know what the party of the candidates are. And that's an example of where we are able to work across these partisan divides. You know, water, which is where my background is, water is an issue that I'm never going to say it's not political, right? I love the expression, you know, whiskey is for drinking and water's for fighting over, and that's certainly true in the Southwest, but the battles have never been ideological battles. They've been interest group, you know, the farmer in the city and the mines. And in the end, we've always been able to find agreement and come together and stand together to put in place what we need. And so that's the bipartisan collaborative spirit that I will bring to the commission, and I will work with everyone and everyone.
I think all of us feel that you're the best, certainly the best qualified candidate in the long term to run for the office, and that your background is perfect for it. And we have Republican newspapers basically endorsing you. We want to thank you for being with us, Jim. We want everyone to read up and take a careful look at the Corporation Commission, and remember to vote all the way down the ballot. If you have a Pebble, if you've got an early voting ballot, you can't mail it in now. You have to take it either to in Sedona to the city council area drop-off box, or you have to take it to the polls. Thank you for being with us, Jim. We really appreciate you calling in and talking with us.
Thank you very much, and I'll just mention if folks want to see more about it, if they go to my Hallway for Arizona Facebook page or my Hallway 2014 website, you can see a lot more information.
Yes, I've been to your Facebook page. That's an excellent page.
An excellent website. I think people will learn a lot. If people want to know something beyond all the attack ads and stuff, it's good to go to your site, and they'll get a good sense of who you are and what your politics and what your positions will be. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Michael. Mr. Weiser, are you there?
Michael Weiser.
There you are.
Hi.
All right. Well, we're doing, we just talked to Jim Holloway, a candidate for Corporation Commission, and now we are seamlessly switching over to another candidate, Michael Weiser, who is running for District 4. At the federal level, he's running against Paul Gosar.
For Congress.
Yeah. Jim was running for a statewide office, and now we're going to talk to Michael, who is running for a federal office, just to keep everybody totally confused. Good morning, Michael. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm good at keeping people totally confused. I can help whenever you're ready.
You know, it's an important skill for a politician, actually.
So Michael, you're running on the Democratic ticket in a really heavily Democratic congressional district, or what?
No, I would not say that. In fact, it's said that Congressional District 4 is the reddest part of our very red state.
There you go. That's probably true, actually. How much contact? We just talked to Jim Holloway that felt like the Republicans haven't had to show up to anything.
They're refusing to show up, and in general, the Republican-dominated media is doing their best to not report on Democratic perspectives. it's a good thing you guys have a radio show, because it's probably the only place in the state that people can hear it statewide.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we're here.
So tell us a little bit about your background, Michael. I know you were a plumber, and you didn't go to college till you were 30, and you taught junior.
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, I grew up in Texas. I'm a nightclub singer, and being artistic and creative had been part of my upbringing as a child. My dad was a construction worker, and he wanted me to take up his shovel when he moved into the office, so I spent my early years digging ditches and didn't really learn to type till I was 27. Moved to Illinois and saw that there were places in America that weren't redneck Republican dominated, and it just changed my life. I joined the local activist community in Illinois, went to college at 30, got a couple of master's degrees, and became a freelance writer and homeless shelter administrator. Eventually I moved out to Arizona when my late wife took too ill to continue her teaching career, and I became a teacher.
So let's talk about your strategy, and I know you have one. Full disclosure,
I do.
Michael and I are sort of friends, but then again, it's hard to not meet
you
Michael.
You have the same first name, too.
He spells his funny.
So Kyle is the Mexican word or the Spanish slang word for guys with the same first name.
Okay, well, I can't make fun of your name.
That was clever on my part, wasn't it?
Yeah, very clever. Very good.
Yeah, so strategy.
Strategy and
let's talk about that.
We want to talk about strategy and your opponent.
And Mike, issues.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's get lost.
One or two issues.
Start with strategy and I'll get to the other two. Okay, so strategy. We are immensely outmatched, the David and Goliath thing, and this is one of a couple of congressional districts where the dominant culture is Republican and conservative, redneck, and those are things that don't need to be the dominant culture. Now, this is Arizona, so people are going to be outdoorsy and rugged and individualist, and all that stuff could be Democrat just as well, or let me say, caring about others instead of just being selfish. So what our point in developing a campaign out here in the West is we could either, sit around and let the bullies dominate us forever or start some sort of fight back. When I moved to Arizona, there's a lot of hostility. Anybody that had anything other than a strictly Reagan-loving view of America. So I started out on street corners with, a protest sign and writing political columns. I've been writing political stuff, in various magazines and newspapers for about 20 years. I encourage people to look up my name. Look at Op-Ed News, and you can see the last 4 years of my writing anyway.
And in Kingman, you did a lot of civic work, right, with the libraries and that kind of thing.
Well,
it's not all been politics.
Like I said, I'd grown up to be an artist, brought up in a very creative family. So when I moved to Arizona, or to Bullhead City, in fact, and found there was no arts community or a paltry arts community, I got involved with them. And that's part of, the strategy, because I actually was talking about the strategy, and it's a longer arcing thing than a campaign. When the last guy got 22% of the vote, you can't really talk to people about how you're going to win, and when I get in office, without people thinking you're delusional. Being an eccentric artist, I already struggle with that anyway. So I had to tell people, look, we're going to start the fight. We're going to start the movement. I mean, we're not in as bad of a situation as, say, blacks were in the South in 1954 after winning Brown versus the Board of Education. They won that one election, but, the culture was decidedly working against them and their equality. Not election. They won that Supreme Court case, but the culture in the South was decidedly against black people getting equality and getting a fair chance in life. But they organized and they continued to fight, and eventually things have improved. Equality. But I think that if we start fighting now, I see that I inspire people around the state to start their own campaigns and their own fights. And it's just basically getting sick of being pushed around and encouraging people it's okay to be sick of being pushed around.
So what do you predict? I don't always think, obviously, that the story is always in the numbers, but it is a numbers game. We're talking about elections. So 22% last time. What do you think you're going to do this time?
The goal that I set for my campaign was a phenomenal, unheard-of goal of 15% voter improvement. Imagine. You get 15% great increase in people voting for you instead of the other guy. There's Washington think tank guys who would be paid millions for that. Of course, in this election, I'll still lose 37 to 63.
Looking at high 30s. Well, that's great.
Right. So, but
how are you running a campaign, Michael, with no money?
Let's talk about that too.
Hold on, part of the strategy. Think of that question. We want to talk about that, but I do want to give you some feedback on your signs. You know, the people who drive around Sedona, Verde Valley, not Sedona so much, but certainly on the other side since he's,
right.
Right. Let's make that clear. We're on a Sedona radio station. You won't find Michael on your ballot. He'll be on the Verde Valley ballot.
That's true.
Right. For people who are listening in Prescott, in Cottonwood, even in Payson, maybe Ash Fork, those areas, I am the Democratic candidate.
Right.
If you're listening in Flagstaff, Sedona, and heading north and east, then I'm hoping you're voting for Ann Kirkpatrick.
Right.
But in my race, I'm asking you to vote for me. Thing is, the more people that decide that they're tired of being, you know, submissive in their oppression, the quicker we'll end the oppression.
Democrats have been taught
that we are not acceptable in Western or in Arizona culture, that we're the, quote, filthy commies. You know, I've never read Marx or Engel or any of those guys.
Nobody's ever read Marx.
I'd like to point out that if people think that this whole scenario of bullying is blown out of proportion, the last election in 2012, we had Democrats shot at in their car. In Camp Verde, we had homes vandalized for having Democratic signs out front. This is a real problem in this area.
Right.
And I'm sure it's worse in your part of the state.
It is. I know people who have been fired for their jobs. There's bumper stickers that have, liberal hunting license on them. And just yesterday while we were canvassing, our volunteers got treated with all sorts of disgraceful behavior. The Republicans are just, and let me apologize to anybody who doesn't feel like they're actually being this way, and maybe you should check it, but the Republican mentality, the Republican message is selfishness and aggression and exploitation. And a lot of people like that because they're into, like, taking advantage. So it's good business, Michael.
It's
really important because we can't let our society be dominated by that kind of mentality. It's always going to be the rich hiring the goons to exploit the poor.
When my son did some organizing years ago, I guess, in Kingman, he met a whole bunch of Democrats who were afraid, you know, to put signs in their yard. And bumper stickers and worried about anybody finding out they were Democrats. That level of fear doesn't exist over here, certainly, in Sedona.
Well, it does in Camp Verde. Let me
encourage you not to buy into the right-wing framing, because us liberals, typically trying to understand the other guy, buy into the right-wing framing so often. The bullying is happening. The exploitation, coercion, the force of using power is part of the Republican operating system. And if we don't confront it and we don't call them on it, then we don't build a force to fight against it.
Michael, I did want to ask you one question. And how, what kind of response do you get when you go in canvas and you talk to Democrats? Are they surprised to see a Democrat? Are they pleased?
Well, I'm going to say they fall into two groups. Disillusioned Democrats who had given up to think that they'd ever find anybody who would fight back or wasn't complicit with the Republicans. And there's a lot of those. We've talked to hundreds of voters over the last week here in the Kingman area, which is where I'm calling from. And a third of them had given up on the process. The Republican hegemony in this part of the state is so complete that they don't even fight anymore. They were disillusioned. So that's a third of them. There's another, I would say, 10-15% who are inspired to see somebody as feisty as I'm willing to be. I mean, we lost as many, when I say we, meaning the Democratic Party, lost as many people falling off to the left who thought that we weren't trying hard enough.
Right.
As we've lost to the right who really thought that Reagan was a good idea. I mean, that shows brain damage. And the other people who gave up on the Democrats for not fighting or not, you know, sticking to our values, were burned in a succession of times. I mean, as a political writer, I used to look at elections kind of closely and, you know, what's going on in policy. And just about every time that the Democrats get awarded some support from the country, from the voters, from the activists like myself, they end up not being able to accomplish their goal or compromising away their goal. And that's led to a lot of legitimate anger among the voters. So
let's talk about
my point is to say, yeah, I know that those guys did that, but you're with me and we're not going to do that.
Yeah, good.
We're going to build our new Democratic Party. I mean, that's what Tom Hartman encouraged people to do last decade is you don't like the way the Democrats are acting. Start becoming the Democrat.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to, Michael, is
yes.
I want to use your signs. We're going to be perfectly clear about this, obvious anyway. I want to use your signs as a lead-in to you to talk about issues. We want to talk about Michael Weiser and what he's going to would do as representative, the congressman from Arizona. But I want to mention your signs first because I got two reviews, one that says it was great to have somebody put some art on a, you know, campaign. One of the campaign signs are a hot button issue. People hate them. People are, they've had enough of them. They can't wait till it's over. They understand free speech and that you have to put up with them. But some people really, really don't see the point. Your signs are artful and on the one hand. On the other hand, I've had other people, at least one, say that they are, because they are artful, are not as professional looking as some of the other signs out there. So you have both sides of that. You have these rather unique signs. So please, as you drive around today and tomorrow, look for Michael Weiser's artful signs and see what you think and whether they should be more standard and professional or they should be. And your signs seem to be an indication of who you are, sir. So please give us some idea on Michael Weiser, congressman.
Well, Michael Weiser's agenda, you know, the things that I'm trying to get through my campaign are infusion of federal support for education. Now, I'm working at the federal level. Arizona is a state that's been ravaged by Republican cuts to education. I spent the last 12 years as a school teacher, so I'm pretty dedicated to that issue. I mean, I've been a writer my whole life, and teaching is the current job that I just left as a writer, okay? But education is the foundation of our nation, and the way that they're approaching this is going to cause tremendous devastation. I figured I'd throw that rhyme in there. We have had class sizes increase. We've had electives cut away. We've had social supports cut away from the schools. We've had staff cut away from the schools. And it's really caused what I consider a chaos and a misdirection of educational focus. So,
by electives, you mean music and art?
Yes. Well, music, art, and PE are the ones that keep, the electives that keep hanging on. But we've lost foreign languages. We've lost specific kinds of art. We've lost vo-tech classes in schools. And, you know, there's not to say that there aren't some schools that have plenty of funding and are doing fine and have all these things going on, but I'm from the rural part of the state.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of robotics labs around here, do you?
In Arizona, the rural community is an oppressed minority.
That's a good point.
I'm not going to, like, go into a dissertation about the Kingdom of Maricopa, but I'm sure that most of your listeners are familiar with that myth that the cities control the state and everybody else gets the scraps. Well, that myth is based on some reality. And it really shows up when it comes to rural schools. So education is my number one issue. I want to get class sizes back down to 25 per class for secondary, 15 per class for elementary. I think that the way to solve this is federal funding. As far as I'm concerned, the U.S. Constitution in its preamble alone encourages the Department of Education. I go into that aside because my opponent, Paul Gosar, wants to dismantle the Department of Education and stop federal funding of education.
How about health care? We're going to go over the hot-button issues, Mike.
Okay.
Health care, labor,
I was
immigration.
A universal health care person. I wrote articles about Big Pharma's influence in the muddled ACA that we ended up with. However, that said, the ACA, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is such a tremendous advance in America health American health policy that it's got to be accepted as a necessity, as a good. I'd like to see it expanded health care for all, universal health care. I think that that should be a human right, and I'm working towards that in the long run.
So instead of going from what you call the muddled Affordable Care Act, ACA, go from the muddled ACA to universal health care. Well, certainly Democrats in this room are with you on that. How about immigration? That I almost hate to ask because it's one of those things.
I'm glad you did, because immigration, along with education, is one of my three main issues. You know, I have a perspective on a wide variety of things, and there's probably a dozen platform points that we worked out policies on or approaches on. But the top three are education, immigration, and legalization of cannabis, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. As for immigration, I grew up on the border of Texas. My hometown's 85% Hispanic. The border is rather porous. There's people going back and forth through checkpoints and through undocumented crossings constantly in the area where I grew up. So when I moved to Arizona and saw all this racism against Hispanic people, I was kind of shocked. What I propose on immigration is that we go back 130, 40 years to Ellis Island days, when people like my grandparents could immigrate with no education, no money, no family connection, no ID, and no English. That what I just described is those Honduran and Guatemalan immigrants that the Republicans tell us are demons and evil, you know? The problem that these kids that came to the border didn't come swimming across the Rio Grande River. They went across the bridges at Matamoros and Reynosa to try to immigrate legally into the United States. But our system, having been exclusionary for the last 100 years, having been racist and create troubles for the poor for the last 100 years, our system could not handle these people. It's a shame on our country that we could not process these immigrants. At the same time, we've got immigrants that are trying to go through the process legally and getting tangled up in unnecessary bureaucracy. In my case, as a candidate, I attract people who tell me of their tales of woe and injustice. I know a lady who was deported because she was the only member of her family not born in Mexico, and they pissed off an immigration officer at one point, and they've been troubled for 10 years. I know a guy who had come in from Latvia to be a computer tech. He's been tangled up in immigration for 14 years. $20,000 invested in his immigration lawyers. Nothing solved. He can't work as a full-fledged U.S. citizen, though he's lived here longer than, you know.
What's the answer, Michael? What can we do about the we've had some...
You've got to cut through this bureaucracy. The bureaucracy was set up to make sure that everybody's got their ass covered, or CYA, I guess is what I should say on the radio. But what you've caused is undue hardship and even death and mayhem, because as John Oliver reported 2 weeks ago, out of Iraq and Afghanistan, the translators who are the interpreters who are working with our government, when they try to immigrate, they're having 3-year delays and not being approved.
The problem is, there's too much focus, in my opinion, on the fear of immigrants. And, you know, I would encourage anyone in Arizona to drive down near the border and look at the impact on the border towns in Arizona of the fence and the restrictions of travel. It's been a huge detriment to the state in terms of economics, that we've lost, you know, lots and lots of jobs, and businesses of where people from Mexico used to come across into Douglas and other towns and make their purchases and head back across the border. Now you go to those towns and there's business after business shuttered.
Right. Well, let me point out, I know that it would be a whole lot better for my public relations if I was kinder to Republicans, but I'm not going to be. They have set up a kleptocracy, crony capitalism arrangement where they have to blame somebody for the ills in the country, the stuff that they're not fixing. So the immigrants are a handy thing to point to because, like, you know, first we teach Americans that they should only care about folks who speak English, and then anybody who comes in and doesn't speak English is immediately suspect.
And if you're not afraid of immigrants, then you should be afraid of Ebola. And you know, there's always every election season, there's always the issues of fear. You know.
And let's turn, Michael, in the last few minutes. We got 3 minutes left. Tell us about your most controversial plaque in your platform, which is the legalization of cannabis.
Well, first talk about the GOP people, their members, the Republicans that have come out in favor of cannabis in the last, legalizing cannabis in Arizona in the last couple of weeks.
Of note, Ethan Orr out of the Tucson area has been an ally on this issue. I am the legislative liaison, in addition to my campaign, I'm the legislative liaison for an organization called Safer Arizona, which is the political action committee working on legalization with the national organization MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project. We had a citizens initiative last year that did not succeed in getting its 250,000 signatures, but we attracted the attention of MPP, who have now launched a national strength campaign for marijuana legalization for 2016.
The latest poll says 51% of Arizonans, the last one I just saw in the Republic 3 days ago, are for the legalization. So it's, can you predict? Once again, we're trying to get you to predict. What do you think is going to happen on this issue?
I predict it's going to be on the ballot in 16 and will be legalized. 2016 is going to see 10, or the strategy is 10 states around the nation will be launching legalization measures in this 2-year cycle. We're one of them. And with Washington, D.C. voting on legalization this year, Florida, Oregon, the momentum is going to be pushing this way. I think it's a super significant change in society. The illegalization of cannabis in the 1930s was done as crony capitalism at its worst, using stereotypes to, you know, demonize blacks and Hispanics. And
we've run out of time, Michael.
Yeah, stick around, though. We got a couple announcements, and then we'll go ahead.
Yeah. Democrats of the Red Rocks is having an election night party. I notice they're not calling it a victory party. And it's at the Java Love Cafe, 7 to 10 p.m. on election eve. Come. It's free. And it should be a lot of fun.
Laugh with us or cry with us.
This podcast, or you can listen to all these shows on the Democratic Perspective website, bvid.org. And we have podcasts for the last 3 years.
Thank you. See you soon.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.